I was married from home, and I'll die in America.
Welcome to our group.
And this ought to show it right here.
Do you or someone you know suffer from depression? If so, please contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255.
Good evening, everybody. Hope you all had a wonderful 4th of July and a safe one. Welcome back tonight. Thank you for joining us for our weekly Medical Tuesday broadcast with your host, our Colonel Kimberly Purvis. Now, if you haven't done so already, be sure to check out our national Facebook page by typing in the search box, all capital letters, Defenders 7. Now, before you hit that join button, just know we expect all of our members and future members to participate throughout all we do here in the Defenders 7. Be sure to check out and subscribe to our website by typing all lowercase letters, www.defenders7.com. On our website, you'll find we have a store and a donate button. 100% of all sales from our store and any donations we bring in go back to our communities throughout all 50 states in a time of need. So please, people, by all means, purchase something from our store or hit that donate button. Help us to help you and your community when you need us. That's the only way that we're able to do everything that we do here in the Defender 7. Check out and subscribe to our YouTube page. We're also on MeWe. Click on Organizations, scroll down. Defender 7, Humanitarian American Patriot Group. Yes, that's right, folks. We are not a militia. Now, for tonight's show and all the shows we do here on Blog Talk Radio, we enjoy it when you call in. Give us your thoughts, your opinions. Participate in the show. And that number to call, area code 914-205-5773. If you're too shy to talk on the phone, we also have a chat room right here on Blog Talk that is also live during all of our broadcasts. So either way, come on in, say hi, participate in the night's topics. And without further ado, allow me to bring in your host, our Colonel, Miss Kimberly Purvis, and our major ass pain, Miss Lorna Munson.
Howdy ho.
Yep.
So, let's do a little bit of BS and like, you know, we normally do before a show anyway. So I don't know if, for those of you who have my Facebook or I have polled, so there's a new scam going around. And it can scare people and intimidate people quite a bit. So my phone was hacked at 3:30 this morning. And I don't know how they did it. I just know they were able to do this. Somebody called my daughter, knew her information, and said, when they called her on her phone, it showed up as mom from my number, right? So that's why she didn't question it. And the person said, I'm with your mom. She needs your help. And she's like, well, what's wrong with her? And the guy said, I just got out of prison and I need money. If you don't help me, I'm going to beat your mom's ass and then I'm going to shoot her in the head. So needless to say, of course, my daughter's like, okay, what do you want? How much do you want? How do you want me to send it to you? And she's like whipping off like Venmo, Cash App, you know, PayPal, anything. The guy got frustrated and said, fuck it, and hung up the phone. So she then called my phone, the number back, which happened to be my phone, and I didn't answer. Well, I was sound asleep at 3:30 in the morning. I'm like, hello. I just went to bed at midnight. So she finally, she called everybody. And I think, Bobby, I think she messaged you, I believe, this morning.
Yeah, I didn't get it till later on.
Yeah, well, she asked me, she goes, you know someone has DD Bobby? Yeah, that's Bobby in the group. And so that's why I messaged you. Well, anyway, she probably got a hold of me at almost 5 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, no, I'm sleeping. So what we did was we checked on our phone. You know it has a phone lock of outgoing and incoming calls. Well, the funny thing is she did a screenshot of her phone and I did of mine. Her phone shows that my number called her at 3:25. I don't have an outgoing call to her, but I've got an incoming one at 3:28 from her. So she called the police department. She panicked and all that, and by the time she got a hold of me, I'm like, okay, well, the police department's closed unless it's an emergency, and getting a crank call at 3 o'clock in the morning is not an emergency. Sorry. So I called the police department, and she called in Knoxville. So I called them and explained what happened, and she's like, and the woman, the dispatch is like, yeah, that's jacked up. So they've been having the police cars come by, you know, periodically throughout the day. Come to find out, there is a scam. When she talked to the Knoxville police, they've been getting a lot of those calls from people. And they just don't know how they're having the call look like it's coming from, like, my phone to my daughter. And it was from somebody else's phone. So they don't know how they're doing it. And so my son, where he works, a former FBI agent actually works there. And he said, yeah, he's been hearing a lot of that also. So be mindful of phone calls and stuff. Don't panic if someone calls with that. I mean, I know that's your first instinct is to panic. So I told my daughter, if she gets another call or anybody, don't panic. Don't negotiate with terrorists. And that's what I call kidnappers. Yes, you're a terrorist. So, anywho, I said, if I get myself in that position, no, I'm either one, going to get out, or two, I'm going to die. I don't want anybody. There's no need in that shit. We ain't made of money. So I already told her. And I said, if the same person calls back, I would just tell them, good luck with her. And that's what my son said. He's like, I would just tell him good luck with that one. Because, yeah, I'd make your life a living hell. I really would. But yeah, it's an eye-opener because, you know, you never know. I don't even know if the person was the person next door or, you know, across the country or another. And the weird thing is, I asked her, I said, did the person have a foreign accent? You know, like the typical scammers from Dubai and over there in India and all those other countries where most of your scammers are at. And she's like, no. She said, it sounded just like some random thug just saying, you know, if you don't give me the money, I'm gonna shoot your mom in the head. And she said that's pretty much all it was, just like some regular, probably cracked out method. So be mindful of that and pay attention to what's going on around you. And yeah, I carry. I have my little that little 3-inch blade I showed you guys, the one that you put your fingers around the handle.
Yeah.
It's like a little Yeah, I carried that on my uniform. I don't give a shit. I had that on my pants, and then I had my little dagger, that little, you know, it's next to my car, my taser, and my gun. I am prepared all the way around. In this day and age, you never know. So, oh, and did you see New York's ridiculous freaking new gun law?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. An answer to the Supreme Court saying constitutional carry across the state, everywhere. In New York, if you want a gun, a concealed carry permit, or to buy a gun, which, don't get me wrong, most of this stuff is normal. To have a concealed carry permit, you have to go through, what is it, 2 hours of range time. I can't remember how much, 16, was it 16 hours of class? Sometimes it's like 2 8-hour days or 4 hours a night for a week. And then a test that you have to pass, right? That's normal. I'm like, okay, whatever. That's nothing new. And then your regular background check. Well, now you have to have four people that they have to be able to call and ask if you should have a gun. And I mean, it's ridiculous. And one of the reporters that was there, she asked, I don't know who the woman was. I don't know if she's the governor or, Dipshit lost his seat because of, you know, his crime. She said, the reporter asked her, well, can you back up making this ridiculous law? Like, out of all the mass shooters, how many of them have concealed carry permits? How many of them actually have a real mental illness? And she said, did you see it, Bobby? She goes, oh, I don't need that. I don't need to have any proof.
That's their new governor.
Their new governor? Okay, yeah, she's a waste of space.
Or not new, but she's being run against
that. Well, she replaced
Cuomo. Yannick guy.
Was it Cuomo? No, Cuomo was the mayor. Who was the governor?
No, Cuomo was the governor.
Was he the governor? And who the hell's the mayor?
The mayor was De Blasio.
Okay, De Blasio. Okay. I know they're both losers. Either way, they're both freaking rats anyway. But yeah, I cannot believe it. She goes, oh no, I don't need proof. I don't need stats. I don't need anything. I can do what I want. Okay. Keep your shithole state. I'm sorry, if you're conservative and you live in New York, you should really be. That's all there is to it. So, and on, I guess it's good news. I really, you know, I don't know. I don't need surgery on my shoulder. Apparently the VA doesn't know how to read an MRI.
That is good news.
Well, apparently the VA, well, for my job it is. Honestly, for them it is. So he said the tear is not 50%. It's somewhere between 25 and 40. It's not as bad as they thought. Nothing he could do but missing cartilage. Not a damn thing. What's he going to do, put more in there? No. What he said was to do physical therapy on my neck. And he said, I told him, I said, well, my arm is numb today. And he says, well, who's dying?
That's Stephanie.
Sorry.
Oh, she's okay.
Oh, God.
She's hacking up half a lung?
Yeah, pretty much.
So, yeah, he said physical therapy on my neck, and he wants me to try minimal physical therapy on my arm. You know, just... ice, heat, and a TENS unit and shit like that. And he wants me to do a cortisone injection, which is fine. I mean, if that's what it takes, and then he wants me to get a cortisone injection in my neck.
My God, a cortisone shot, that's just blocking the problem.
No. It's to get rid of the inflammation. And that's the problem. My spine is narrowed, and it's, because he asked me, he didn't even look at the cervical spine MRI, because that's not what I went there for. And so my C3 to C7 has minimal to mild disc bulge. My C5 and 6 is where it's mild, and there's narrowing in around the spinal cord, you know, the nerves and stuff. So he said, that's why I've got all the numbness to my hands. So he said, there is mild, you know, the arthritis, there is a bone spur in my shoulder, but he said, after 6 weeks, if I'm still having issues, then he'll take a look at it again, and then we'll discuss possible surgery. But right now, he really wants to just do the keep doing the TENS unit every day, in which I have to done. I mean, it does help, but, you know. So, but that is good news, I guess. I really didn't. I mean, I'm like, just fix it. I don't care. But I'm really kind of glad, because I didn't really want surgery, because that's, oh, my God, that's 6 weeks of nightmare. And my patients would be happy. Kids are like, I don't want another. I'm like, I know. Oh my patients don't want another nurse for 6 weeks. I was like, I'm sorry, I'm such a good nurse. So tonight, I don't even know if we've covered all of this before, but I'm going to narrow everything down from now on, and we're going to attack one subject matter at a time. Instead of going broad range, we're just going to do one at a time. Also, to not make it so freaking boring, I'm going to try not to. So we're going to do chronic kidney disease, and there's only a few types of chronic kidney disease. So I'm going to go with, hopefully this works. No! Hate technology. Where's that? Oh, sorry, guys. I thought this was going to cooperate, but it's not. I had everything opened up. Okay, here we go. So chronic kidney disease. Oh. It's a gradual loss of your kidney function. In early stages, you may not even know. You may not have any symptoms of any type of kidney disease. And that's why there's different stages of kidney disease. And we're going to go over all that cool stuff. So some of the symptoms, nausea, loss of appetite, fatigue, swelling of your feet and ankles. Now, with that, you could also have congestive heart failure and have swelling of your ankles and your feet. So don't flip out and panic. If you have if you have CHF and you already have that, that doesn't mean you have kidney disease, okay? So don't panic. That's why we say write all your symptoms down and go to your doctor. And if they need to send you to a specialist, they will. So high blood pressure, the need to urinate more often, especially at night. Now, with that, don't forget, if you take Lasix or furosemide, the pee pill, the water pill, you're going to pee a lot anyway. For men, if you have BPH, or enlarged prostate and all that cool stuff, you're going to be up and down urinating on and off, up and down all night long. You don't always empty your bladder. So just pay attention to that. Decreased mental sharpness, and because your body is not pushing out all the toxins, that's the whole point of your kidneys, is to filter and help get rid of all your waste. And because you're not doing that, and that's why when people get a lot of chronic UTIs, if they're, if you notice, just say, Bobby, if you're just doing whatever you do, and all of a sudden you're confused all the time. You don't know. Just you people think you're just batshit crazy today. You might have a UTI. You might have a UTI because of the infection of toxins building up in your body. Now, granted, usually it's elderly people that get really confused and stuff, and that's the ones that usually like that. But problems with sleep, blood in your urine, protein in your urine. Hate it for you guys. You can have ED. You can also have twitching in the muscles and get cramps, probably going to be leg cramps most likely. Persistent itching, chest pain. If fluid builds up around the lining of the heart, that's what you'll get. You'll get that kind of chest pain. Shortness of breath, and that's because fluid is building up into your lungs. So some of the causes of chronic kidney disease is if you're type 1 or type 2 diabetic, that's usually the biggest, highest risk. Diabetics, I hate it, you know. Diabetics, obese, and smokers and alcoholics usually end up the four highest risks for everything, unfortunately. With this, having high blood pressure, glomerulonephritis, which basically is inflammation in the glomerulus. Glomerulus. I cannot even speak English today. And that's in your kidneys. Polycystic kidney disease, autoimmune disease like lupus. One of my patients, I spoke about her, she has lupus. She does have chronic kidney disease, and she has emphysema. And her lupus is what's creating havoc in pretty much all over. So lupus is a pretty bad, I mean, it can cause havoc in your body. Kidney stones, interstitial nephritis, which is the inflammation of the tubules from your kidney, your bladder, those little tubes. Pyelonephritis. And overuse of certain medication. Let me make sure I get this right. Tylenol ruins your kidney, and Motrin kills your liver. Or did I get that backwards? Hold on a second. I don't know why I forget these two. One or the other. I'm having a brain fart for some reason. Hold on one second. I don't know why. I think Tylenol is what ruins your. Might have it backwards. You guys can talk amongst yourselves for just a second.
Or Lorna could talk to herself.
I don't want to talk to anybody.
Well, how about tough shit?
Too hard.
I don't know why I'm drawing.
I just found out a friend of mine from. A friend of mine from back home died, 55 years old.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Unexpectedly in his sleep.
Oh, well, if you went to sleep, that's the best way to go, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
So, yep. If you have kidney disease, you don't want to take your NSAIDs, your Motrin, Advil, Aleve, and all that. Tylenol is what you want to take if you have kidney problems. If you have liver problems, don't take Tylenol. So, there, got it straightened out. Now, I'll forget that again. I don't know why. But my brain goes on this little stupid thing and forget for some reason. So, prevention. Of course, monitor your blood sugar and monitor your blood pressure. Your adrenal glands sit on top of your kidneys, and that's what controls your blood pressure, and so you want to keep control of your blood pressure. Make sure it's not too high. Avoid smoking. Stop smoking. Stop drinking, and lose weight. Okay, and that's pretty much everything. Maintain a healthy diet. I know. I'm such a, I'm just, you know, I'm like, whatever, gosh. I got to say it.
I should
not. So I can say legally when I tell my patients, hey, look, I'm obligated. I have to tell you this. What you do with this information is all up to you. Should you choose to ignore it, and this is what I tell them, should you choose to ignore it, I don't want to hear you complain about it. they just look at me like, really? I'm like, yeah, really. If you know, I don't care. So my smoker, my COPD is, right? Look, and they all, most of them smoke, right? And I'll see some of them, depending on who it is, and they'll start coughing and coughing and coughing. So I'm like, go ahead, light up another one. And most of them have a sense of humor. Most of them have a sense of humor. And the one that I know, he was in the Army, so I know he does. And I'm like, go ahead. But we have him for kidney disease. But he has COPD, but still. And he goes, you know what? Fuck you. And he goes outside and he smokes. I said, I don't want to hear you huffing and puffing when you walk inside. So, yes, I have that relationship with my patients that I can mess with some of them, but not all of them. So complications, really, kidney failure can affect your whole body. Everything is tied in together, kind of like a car, you know? Like your alternator, and I think your alternator is like your heart. Without an alternator, you ain't going, it's not going to recharge battery and all that shit, and you won't be able to get, you know, the gas is your food. So, I mean, it's everything, I think, is what they did. You know, they took the human body, and I think that's how they made the automobile, to mimic it. So you have a problem with one thing, and it's going to jack up everything else if you don't get it fixed. So fluid retention, kidney failure leads to fluid retention, causing swelling in your arms, anywhere in your body, pretty much. You can get swelling. Cardiovascular disease, heart and blood vessels are affected due to kidney failure. Imbalance in potassium levels, which we all know potassium is one of your important enzymes for your heart. When you get severe diarrhea, you lose a lot of fluid, and there goes your potassium. So that's why. So that's why they always check your potassium. When you have diarrhea and things like that. Decreased immune response, impairing central nervous system, complications in pregnancy, and complete loss of kidney functions in the late stage. So let me see if I have this. I'm trying to look for the stages. Let's see. They talk about the different cholesterol medications to help your cholesterol levels, like all the statin drugs, medications for anemia, your diuretics, and your supplements. I'm looking for, I guess they don't have that one yet, so we'll get to the stages of kidney disease. So we're going to look up kidney stone. Yay, our favorite thing. I don't know if you guys have ever had a kidney stone. They suck. Straight up. So, some kidney stones pass on their own when they're small before causing any symptoms. Your body can pass from a minuscule, teeny tiny little speck up to 5 millimeters, or not 5 centimeters, 5 millimeters. Anything above that, it has to be crushed. And I had one that was 6, and it made an attempt to tumble down my ureter from the kidney to my bladder. It did not make it. It made it a quarter of the way down, and it is the most painful thing. I'd rather give childbirth without pain medication That's how bad a kidney stone hurts. Because it hurts constantly for weeks. So your body can pass them naturally. So normally you get pain in the abdomen or lower back, which is intermittent. It could come and go. You could get severe radiating pain to the groin, the testes in males. For women, it's just in your lower back and under at the right under your belly, right underneath. Pain gets worse when you move. Sometimes it's worse when you go to the bathroom. It feels like a really bad pressure, like you're trying to pass a bowling ball. That's what it feels like, depending on the size. But hey, you can have blood in your urine. You can have, and I hate to be graphic, guys, but you can have pus in your urine. It's not clear. It looks like you've got floating stuff in your urine. That's how you can know something's going on. You could get a high fever. Like I said, difficulty when you urinate. Feeling of urgency. You feel like your bladder's full, right? I don't know if you guys have this. Full bladder. And you go into the bathroom, and I swear to God, you might just, you feel like you got to squeeze it out. I lean forward, push on my stomach, and a little bit comes out, and you stop. You can't go. Nausea, vomiting, and chills are also seen in a case of infection. A lot of times, you could take Peridium, which is a prescription drug, or you could just go to Walmart or any pharmacy and get Azo, A-Z-O. And there's different forms of it. Yes, it does turn your urine orange, so don't panic. It helps relax your ureters and everything so you can go to the bathroom. The prescription strength is a little bit stronger, and it really does help. And sometimes you can, just by drinking a lot of excessive water, a lot of water, cranberry juice, not cocktail, because cranberry cocktail has all the other berries. You want the stronger form of it. And usually you can pass a kidney, like I said, you can pass a kidney stone with nothing, you know. And it could all cause urinary retention.
I think Bobby needs to go take care of his ureters.
His ureters, yeah. You got two ureters? I'm telling you.
That's a fun word, ureters.
I know, ureters. You're ureter. Bobby, have you ever had kidney stones?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, an honest question. What is worse to you, kidney stones or a cold? The man cold. Which to you
kidney stones.
Is, okay. I said that's about the, I don't want to see the equivalent to labor, because labor starts and it stops. Boom, you're done. You know, hopefully within a day. Kidney stones, man, they can last 4 weeks. I've had 8 kidney stones in the last 5 years. Now, I know why. So there are several things that I have learned what can cause kidney stones. Dehydration, consuming inadequate amounts of water regularly for prolonged periods of time greatly increases the risk of kidney stones. See, I didn't know this. People who live in hot, dry climates who sweat a lot are also at an increased risk. So I live in humid heat, so, yeah, but I'm still at risk because I drink a lot of caffeine. And, yeah. Family history. People who have affected family members are more likely to develop it. I think I am the only person in my family who's had 8 kidney stones in 5 years. I don't know if anybody else has had them. I think my mom might have had one or two. certain foods that are a high sodium diet, oxalate foods that increase acid levels can cause obesity. Like I said, see, being fat guys are like that. Diseases and surgery of the digestive tract. Huh?
Vitamin D deficiency.
Oh, I was just going to say that. You beat me to it, but hey, vitamin D deficiency, inflammatory bowel disease, and gastric bypass surgery is a possible cause, and certain medical conditions, hyperparathyroidism, sarcoidosis, UTI, and some cancer. Oh, dude, my phone left. See, someone's trying to hack my shit again. One of my accounts was just suspended. Someone's trying to hack my shit. That's why I'm glad I got that on my phone now. So some prevention, increase your fluid intake and treat the underlying cause to prevent reoccurrence. Like he said, if you know what's causing it, fix it. Unless you like kidney stones, but hey. And try to maintain a healthy diet, consume foods rich in calcium, and avoid calcium supplements. Limit salt and animal protein. Well, I'm not giving up my chicken or my, you know, I just not going to do it. So, by this thing, avoid calcium supplements, are they saying, like, if you don't have, like, you have the calcium, but you need the vitamin D, I mean, if they go hand in hand, why should you avoid calcium?
Well, those are just for people who are prone to getting kidney stones. But if you're postmenopausal female and your metabolism is correct and your vitamin D is adequate and your serum calcium is adequate, your calcium is not going to cluster into calcium oxalate stones. So it will be put in the bone or it will be put, you know, used other places by the vitamin D. So it's just when the vitamin D is deficient and there's nothing to carry the calcium to where it needs to be is when calcium can form deposits, especially in an acidic environment. So if you change the acid, sometimes that breaks down the pH. That breaks down the stones naturally, so you won't get them. Some people will drink alkali water, and that has been known to help them with their, you know, calcium deposits and things like that.
I need to go back to drinking my alkaline water.
Yeah, you need that vitamin D in sufficient amount. Somewhere between 30 and 100 is optimum, and calcium levels normal. But if you're postmenopausal, you also need the vitamin D and calcium supplementation because of the lack of progesterone. Which causes osteoporosis in females, makes it easy for fractures, and et cetera, et cetera.
Cool. See?
No, not cool.
Okay. Huh?
Not cool, painful, and
I didn't mean like, I don't mean it's cool. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, okay. I'm kidding.
So, another one is acute kidney injury. So like I said, it could be asymptomatic. When you do have symptoms, you can have swelling of the legs, ankles, and feet, fatigue, loss of appetite, nausea, and chest pain. And again, always keep track of any symptoms you have and go to your doctor. Because you don't want to just say, I'll give it a month or whatever, and that's not really good to do. So acute renal failure causes, can be pre-renal, renal, or post-renal. Wow, that just sounds... So post-renal or pre-renal is when the blood flow to the kidney is impaired. And so some of these can can cause impaired blood flow, severe blood loss, heart disease, liver failure, some medications like aspirin and ibuprofen, overuse of your NSAIDs, which is also Advil, Aleve, and all those, you know, good ones, damage to the kidney, a blood clot formation in the kidney, kidney infections, chemotherapy drugs, and some antibiotics. It doesn't say which ones. Hemolytic uremic syndrome.
Aminoglycosides.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is the hemolytic?
Cyclosporin, cisplatin, aminoglycoside, and NSAIDs are renal nephrotoxic drugs.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
What is hemolytic uremic syndrome?
It's when the blood cells break apart and releases urea into the bloodstream.
Oh, okay. I've never heard of it. And the word I have a hard time pronouncing it, is glomerulonephritis. Did I pronounce that right?
You can get that post-strep after having a strep infection. You got to watch out for that.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
That's why we test for strep A, because it can cause that hemolytic uremic, and it causes post-streptococcal glomerulonephritis.
Ah, learn something new every day. Blood vessel inflammation or vasculitis, post-renal urinary obstruction, a disease that causes blockage of urine, including colon cancer, prostate cancer, cervical and cancer, and blood clots. And some of the bigger risk factors, age, diabetic, high blood pressure, blocking the blood vessels in the arm or leg, kidney disease, and liver disease.
What causes anemia and kidney disease?
I don't know. I've never really worked too much with the kidneys.
What is erythropoietin?
It's your red blood count, right? Yeah.
No.
You have to educate me, because I have...
It's a Google question, I think.
It's going to be a Google question, because I'm going to Google it. Now, what was the question?
What is erythropoietin?
Oh, okay. Yeah, my thing, I never really worked with kidneys in any of my 22 years of nursing, so I'm like, aside from high blood pressure, and I'm just now getting into, like, that's where I want to go over the chronic kidney diseases and stuff. So erythropoietin is a hormone secreted by the kidneys that increases the rate of production of red blood cells in response to falling levels of oxygen in tissue. Is that about right? Is that what you were looking for an answer?
Yeah, that was it. I just wanted you to know that whenever people have problems with their kidneys, because of the lack of the erythropoietin, red blood cell production slows down or is eliminated, and they have to be given that to the hematologist. They'll be treated with it for it. But a lot of times it has to do with damage to your kidneys or the area of the kidneys that make erythropoietin. And usually it ends up being classified as anemia of chronic disease.
Okay, because this other definite, well, this other part over here says erythropoietin is a glycoprotein cytokine secreted mainly by the kidneys in response to cellular hypoxia, and it stimulates the red blood cell production in the bone marrow. Low levels of EPO are consistently secreted in sufficient quantities to compensate for normal blood cell turnover. Common causes of cellular hypoxia resulting in elevated levels of EPO include any anemia, hypoxemia due to chronic lung disease.
Like COPD?
Yes. Chronic respiratory failure? Yeah, that's what I want to go over. That's why I want to cover a lot more kidneys because, yeah.
Yeah,
I didn't do dialysis. Huh?
I think the kidneys are very important. The nephrotic system, very important.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can live with
filter.
One kidney. Yeah, you can live with one kidney.
My grandfather got kicked by a horse and went his whole life with one kidney. They never took his bad kidney out. They just left it in. And they said, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
And so he went his whole life with one kidney. And then in his 80s, the bad kidney just, boom, started working out of the clear blue. They have no idea why. And his good kidney failed. And then his bad kidney actually ended up failing, and he died from renal failure in his 80s. But it was weird how he went his whole life with one kidney, and then just out of the clear blue, it just started working again. I mean, he didn't live, it wasn't that long, though. Don't get me wrong, it wasn't, you know, years. I believe it was like his last year, you know, or so. So pyelonephritis is a sudden and severe inflammation of the kidney due to a bacterial infection. So,
yeah, pyelonephritis is very common in females with UTIs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you'll have back pain, CBA tenderness, and you'll have a high liquefied esterase count in your urine. And that's when we classify that as a pyelonephritis. But, you know, we'll also do the blood test to see if your white blood cells are elevated too, which they should be in pyelo.
Now, with a UTI and the pyelonephritis, I know they both have a fever, but does the pyelonephritis usually have a higher fever, or are they both about the same?
You know, fever is like hypothalamus dependent, and it depends on the individual, really.
Oh, okay.
It really depends because
some
people's internal thermostat works different than others, and so, you know, what might be a high fever for one person is nothing for another. You'll probably have more fever in pyelo, but the hallmark sign of it is back pain, right underneath the ribs in the back. That's the costal vertebral angle tenderness. You need tenderness? Yeah. And a lot of times you have blood, you'll have pus, and the pus is what they say pyelo. They mean pus or white blood cells.
Nausea, vomiting, loss of appetite. That's some of the usual things that you get with that too. Cloudy urine, burning feeling while urinating, urgent or frequent urination. And if your urine smells fishy, I did not know that your urine could smell that way. I've just never actually seen anybody with that. Usually it's a really just a concentrated stout smell that just, is that what they're talking about?
Yeah, because you'll have, sometimes you'll have a fishy odor coming from the vagina. It usually that's associated with the bacterial vaginitis. But when the urine also smells fishy, then you want to think maybe it's further up in the system, not just either a cystitis, which would be the bladder.
If it's a guy, well, that's kind of like narrows it down. Because, you know, you guys don't have one. So.
Right. Yep. Well, guys have a longer urethra, and so they're going to have a lot more symptoms. They're going to be complaining about dysuria, burning, and discharge, which isn't normal for a guy. And most of the time, when it's a guy, it's usually sexually transmitted, like a gonorrhea or a chlamydia.
For pyelonephritis?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, wow. And you get that nice long Q-tip stuck up there.
Not anymore. Not anymore. Just the urine.
Really?
We don't do those very often. I mean, some clinics do. They want to do a culture doing it that way, but we just get the urine and send it out for cultures and sensitivity.
I mean, it makes sense because when you urinate, if there's anything up in the urethra, the urine's gonna pass right past it anyway, and it'll pick it up. But I get what you're saying, if
right.
they want to do a culture too, whatever. Oh no! You guys can't bypass all this other BS. Like we have mammograms and all this other stuff and. No, you guys can't you get your prostate checked. I guess that's bad enough.
Well, no, if you expect that, it's just in the urethra, we call it, you know, urethritis, then you would do a cotton tip.
Oh, okay.
A swab, basically. But when you expect it further up in the urinary tract, you know, unless it's in the urethra, you may miss it with that cotton swab, so it's better just to do an amplified DNA off the urine.
Oh. And see, sometimes we have to do, instead of us doing a clean cat or whatever, we've actually done straight cat to go straight,
uh-huh.
you know, to bypass,
or
which is not a bad thing.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll also do a super pubic as well, especially if there is blockage. You know, you're having a difficult time urinating, and you don't want to take a chance of sticking a catheter in there, especially in a man. You don't want to rip from a new prostate. So, you know, or if it's something blockage.
We've had to use the Coudet, you know, that one that's bent with men with prostate problems, and I had one lady this weekend. I was on call Friday night, and I was like, oh, my God. I asked her daughter. I said, is your mom allergic to anything? She goes, no, just penicillin. I think she has a UTI, which she probably did. And so I called the doctor, and he says, Bactrim. We send it into the pharmacy. Oh, no. The pharmacy's like, no, she's allergic to Bactrim and penicillin. Well, shit. Okay. So I call the doctor back again. He gives me Keflex. The pharmacy. Pharmacy's like, no, she's allergic to that too. I'm like, well, Jesus, what is this woman not allergic to? The daughter had no clue what her mom was allergic to. Huh?
Yep. Nitrofurantoin, macrobid.
That's what
and
they ended up giving her. Was
yeah.
macrobid.
If it's resistant to that, then you go with Cipro.
Well, the funny thing is the doctor's like, I mean, I want a UA after, you know, to see if, you know, make sure she's got the right antibiotic. I said, well, we got a problem. She's bedbound, and she can't use the bedpan. And her doctor's like, I said, well, the only other option we have is a straight cap. She goes, no, that'll cause a UTI. She already has one. It's not going to give her what she already has one. I said, but if you do, it's a sterile procedure, you know, technique and all that. I said, it's in and out, you know, it's done. I said, we do get a lot of UTI, chronic UTIs, with people who have catheters that stay in for 30 days at a time. And they do get chronic UTIs, which is why we have to change them out once a month, but they still get them. So some of the preventions for pyelonephritis is drink plenty of water, wash off any infections and toxins from the body. Okay, this is saying clear your bladder after sex.
Wash your toys.
Wash your toys, I guess, yeah. Avoid using creams and lotions in genital areas. So, yeah, that's why they have KY jelly, the lubricant. Try not to use lotions because it's all up in the lady's business and, you know, and that can cause problems.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
No fun.
Yeah, personal lubricant, estrogen creams, things like that.
Yep. Okay.
Can't see. Can't see, can't pee, can't see, can't pee, can't bend a knee or climb a tree. What do I have?
You can't pee. You're a train wreck.
Can't see, can't pee, can't bend a knee to climb a tree. What do I have? And
you're
we
old.
Call that writer syndrome. Writer's syndrome. Most likely you have gonorrhea.
Oh.
Gonorrhea.
I did not know that causes problems to your vision.
You can have gonorrhea in the eye. Babies are born with it.
Well, that
you
I knew.
Have problems.
Yeah,
you can have problems in the joints. You can develop a reactive arthritis and a reactive urethritis, causing difficulty peeing, difficulty with the bending the knee. That's what they say, bend the knee or climb a tree. You can have a so you get a 51-year-old female come in and she's got a swollen knee and she's got a blurry eye and she's got the what we used to call the prostitute eye or the sailor's eye, where one eye is bigger than the other, the pupil.
Uh-huh. And what's
and
it called?
And it's called Reiter's syndrome, R-E-I-T-E-R-S. Writers.
Oh, well, I looked at the wrong thing because I looked at, never mind. I was like, that's nothing to do with what you just said.
R-E-I-T-E-R-S.
Oh, okay, there it is. Writer's syndrome, okay. Okay, so it's also known as reactive arthritis, is a clash of triad of conjunctivitis, urethritis, and arthritis. Is that what you're talking about? Okay.
Yeah. Can't see, can't pee,
okay.
Can't bend the knee. Reactive arthritis, reactive urethritis, because of the dysuria and the conjunctivitis. So you can't see, you can't pee, you can't bend the knee.
Gotcha.
A lot of times you got that triad going on. First thing you think is gonorrhea, chlamydia.
Okay.
Neat stuff. The prostitute side, that's pretty cool. You can pick that right away.
I think I'm not laughing at it. It's just funny how some of the names are. Of the things they have for it.
I think they have, right? Yeah. Like Virchow's triad, Virchow. There's all kinds of ways to try to pick out stuff just by looking at people. And that's why a lot of times a good doctor will walk in and just look at you and tell you what's wrong with you before you even open your mouth.
Well, that's good. I mean, you know, how common is nephrotic syndrome?
I probably had 3 patients in the last 10 years.
Okay. So I just want to cover all the common ones first. before.
Yeah, and I had, you know, that guy, he ended up getting hydronephrosis because he had a blockage somewhere in the ureter or somewhere in the kidney, and ended up having nephrostomy tubes in the back so he could pee.
Hold on, what?
Imagine peeing out of your back, right out of your kidney.
Okay, so I was just going to go over, we'll go over and go amyloidosis. How common is that one?
It's more autoimmune, I think. I haven't seen it really much. It's not very common.
We can kind of cover it. So symptoms depend on the type of amyloidosis and the organ affected, but swollen ankles and legs, severe fatigue, shortness of breath, significant weight loss, just difficulty swallowing, tingling, numbness, or pain in the hands, wrists, or feet, enlarged tongue, irregular heartbeat, diarrhea, sometimes with blood, easy bruising or sickening, or purplish patches on the skin. And this is kidneys?
Well, it depends on what organs affected, but yeah, because your kidneys regulate your sodium balance too, and so you can develop an osmotic edema.
Oh, okay, so they got they got the one for the bone marrow. They have the AA amyloidosis, which occurs through the chronic inflammatory infection, and then there's dialysis-related amyloidosis, and that affects people who are in long-term dialysis for more than 5 years. And the proteins in the blood get deposited in your joints and tendons. So, and then they have a hereditary form of it. And usually it hits you in the 60s and 70s, most commonly in men. And chronic infectious or inflammatory disease increase the risk. Yeah, and with dialysis, what's the longest people really can be on dialysis?
Forever, for life.
They can?
Yeah, especially if they don't qualify for a kidney transplant. If they don't qualify for a kidney transplant for it, there's no donor, there's no match, or, you know, they don't want to change their lifestyle, smoking, drinking, whatever, and or they are at risk from the procedure itself of having the transplant, which, you know, it's too risky. So people can be on dialysis forever.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. I mean, I didn't know. I think the longest I've seen someone is 5 years. Really? That's the longest I've ever seen anyone. I had one lady at my other home health company. She had a kidney transplant 10 years ago. And she's on lifetime anti-rejection medication. I mean, that's, now don't we have to look at that too, if your body can withstand that as well?
Yeah, well, everyone who gets an organ transplant is on anti-rejection, immune system medications to reduce the immune response to that organ so that you don't, your body doesn't reject the organ. Even though it's a perfect match, they still, the research still says they need to be on that, you know, immune blockers, I guess you call it.
Now, is it the same one, or is there, like, different ones for heart, lungs, liver, kidneys? I mean, are they all the same, or are there different
There's different ones. Yeah, there's some people can be on something as simple as prednisone. It just depends on what what organs transplanted. But for the most part, the kidney transplant or liver transplant, they're going to be on a specific immunosuppressant is what they call it.
Oh, okay. And I know you do have to worry about infections because you can just, boom, I mean, anything can, yeah, you have to worry about all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you definitely want to have to make sure that your vaccines are up to date.
Yeah. So hydronephrosis is another one I want to go into. So pretty much all of these kidney issues have all the same symptoms, usually. They're all the same.
Mm-hmm.
Pain in the abdomen or the flank, nausea, vomiting, sweating, pain while urinating, incomplete voiding, which you're not emptying your bladder out completely, and fever. Now, does that mean you're going to have every single symptom?
No.
You may have them all. You may have a few of them. So hydronephrosis could be a result of certain diseases like kidney stones. It could be a congenital defect, a blood clot, scarring of tissue from injury or previous surgery. You could have a tumor or cancer in the bladder, the cervical, colon, or prostate. For guys, you can have an enlarged prostate. Pregnancy, UTIs, and inflammation of the urethra or urinary tract. Now, what were you saying about the guy? You said had the hydronephrosis?
He had an obstructive prostate. The prostate was obstructing the urinary outflow, and to come out, the urine was backing up into the system, causing swelling in the kidneys. We call it hydronephrosis.
What if you get a kidney stone that gets blocked into the ureter from your kidney down, and it blocks that? Now, what kind of damage will that do to the kidney? I mean, I know it'll damage your kidney, but
your urine that the kidney is making is not able to get out, so the kidney starts swelling up like a balloon and can rupture. And they have to put in nephrostomy tubes or emergency surgery to remove the blockage. Sometimes lithotripsy is enough to break up the stone. It's like kind of an ultrasonic sound wave, kind of breaks up the stones. But not all stones are susceptible to lithotripsy because there are different types of kidney stones. Calcium oxalate is one of four that I think. I think there's four different types of kidney stones that we know about. And calcium oxalate is just one form of the kidney stone. I think hydroxyurea or something like that may be another. I just can't remember all four of them right now. But some of them are translucent. They will not show on an X-ray, and some of them will show on X-ray. But, yeah, so if you do have a blockage anywhere in the system that's backing the urine up into the kidneys start enlarging or swelling, and they call that hydronephrosis. And something drastic has to be done to relieve the pressure off the kidneys. And so that usually they'll put tubes in your kidneys to drain them out if they have to, or they'll try to remove the blockage through, like, an emergency procedure or something. Did I lose you? Hello?
Got you. Stop.
I think my Bluetooth died.
No, we can still hear you. You there? Do you mind that? Bobby, did you unmute me?
Yeah, I did. We lost.
Oh, okay.
We lost Phil. We lost Phil.
Oh, okay. Well, shit. His Bluetooth died. That was the last thing he said. I touched mine, and it freaking kicked me off. I just touched mine. I'm like, what the hell? So,
there he is.
Oh, you got him back? Okay. I was trying to find the types of kidney stones, and it would not. Did he get back on?
Yeah, I'm here. You hear me?
Okay.
Yeah, my Bluetooth died, and then you guys, that's one way of shutting me up, huh?
I know, huh? So, the types of kidney stones, that's what I was looking for. That didn't do shit. The difference. I know why the one I had was not a smooth one. Mine looked like Jack. You know, like the Jack we used to play with back in the day? That's what one of mine looked like. And it tumbled, and as it tumbled, it was just tearing everything as it went down. Yeah, that was painful. So the different types is calcium, uric acid, and struvite stone? Cysteine stone?
Yep, those are, yeah, the most four stones that I'm aware of. Yeah, struvite, cysteine, uric acid, and calcium oxalate.
So the cysteine, but isn't there different shapes, though? They got some that they look like they're like little marbles or smooth, and that's what I was actually looking for, is they got pictures, but pictures don't do any good. Oh, here we go. Come on, open up. Sorry. So the cysteine stones look like, if you were to look at the crystals, like the amethyst and all those, that's what those look like, just little hunks of rock. And the calcium stones are little ones. They look like little peas. And the uric acid stones look just like a stone. And the struvite, those are the flat ones. Oh no, they actually have different ones too.
Yeah, uric acid is a fine needle crystal.
Try that. This picture's not cooperating. I'm trying to make it bigger. There we go. So it says silica. Silica stones actually look like, honest to God, if you look at the COVID virus, look how it's round with a little spike on, that's what those look like. That's what I had, something that looked like that. And the calcium oxalate, it looks the same also. They're just round with little protrusions, and they do hurt. When you try to pass them bad boys, they do hurt. So let's see, we've got a couple that's left. Kidney cysts. This says there's more than 200,000 cases a year in the United States of a kidney cyst.
They're very common.
Oh, they really? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Abdominal pain, abdominal swelling, fever, frequent urination, back pain, and high blood pressure. See, pretty much the same. Everything's pretty much the same. The exact cause of a simple kidney cyst is not known. Is age and gender. Usually more men get them. Not to say that women can't get them. So you get cyst infection. A ruptured cyst can cause severe pain, and you can also get hydronephrosis. That's pretty much it. That's the gist of kidney cysts. Are they kind of like ovarian cysts, kind of like the same thing, different organs?
Kind of, sort of, but no, kind of different too. A lot of times ovarian cysts are just like an empty follicle.
Oh, okay.
Like what should be an egg is just an empty hole that kind of fluid filled in with something. And then sometimes you'll get an infection, and you know how like you get a pimple on your where the infection is.
Yeah.
Well, once the infection dies, it leaves the space, and the body fills it in, and sometimes it becomes a solid cyst. And so cysts can be a number. They can be fluid filled. They could be bacterial infections. They could be sarcoid. So there's something called polycystic kidney disease. That's something that can become troublesome for people.
Yeah, and the polycystic ovarian. Yeah, the PCOS.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I was wondering. I had ovarian cysts, and on my right ovary, and it ruptured. And it is it's very painful, unfortunately. Okay. Kidney cancer. We've got two left.
What about a horseshoe kidney? What's that?
Huh?
What's a horseshoe kidney?
A horseshoe kidney? I have no idea. But you know what? I will Google it just to
it's
find out.
Common. It's very common.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, look. Horseshoe kidney. Oh, they actually have an ICD number. Oh, the kidneys are attached. I thought kidneys were supposed to be separate.
Yep, normally they are, but there's variations.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say. Yeah, the two kidneys are attached at the bottom.
It looks like
now,
a horseshoe.
How common is that? Huh? Yeah, henceforth the horseshoe. How common is it?
I think I have like 4 patients right now with that.
Really?
Yeah.
1 in 500 people.
Well, there you go. That's pretty common.
That is. More common in men, usually it's asymptomatic, and it's diagnosed accidentally.
What? Ultrasound or x-ray?
Honestly, Huntington's. I've had 3 patients in 22 years with Huntington's.
Wow, that's no fun.
3. No, 4. One was way back when, and I've got 3 now in the same hospital, which is really weird because I've never really... one of them is actually my patient, but the other two is on the other team, and I didn't know how common it can be and how hereditary it is. You know, her twin sister, the one patient that I have now, well, she's actually got it and she's dying from it. She's transitioning right now. Her twin sister died from it when she was in her 50s, and their mother had it, and she died from it. And I think he said the grandmother or the aunt had it as well. And one of their sons has it, and he died. I didn't realize it was that. I mean, I know it's genetic, but I didn't realize there was that many. It seems just like that from generation to generation that could have it. So kidney cancer. So some of the most common symptoms, blood in your urine, sudden weight loss, a lump in the abdomen, pain in the lower back, fever, and loss of appetite. The weight loss, the drastic weight loss, unintentional, it's usually cancer in general, but that's how they'll do all your different tests to find out whatever. But obesity, advanced age, kidney cancer risk increases with age, consumption of tobacco or dip, chew, smoking, any of that, hypertension, some disease conditions, Burt-Hodge-Doob syndrome. I have never heard of that. And I guess I'm going to have to go look that. I'm going to look it up just so I know what it is.
It sounds like one of those rare genetic deals.
Yeah. of course, when I come across one of these unusual things, I'm going to look it up just because. Okay. Oh. So, it's called Burt Dube or Dubé. It's B-I-R-T hyphen H-O-G-G hyphen D-U-B with the little E has a little on the top of it. Anyway, it's a syndrome. It's rare. That affects the skin and lungs and increases the risk of certain types of tumors. And it signs and symptoms vary among individuals. It's characterized by multiple non-cancerous benign skin tumors, particularly on the face, neck, and upper chest. Oh, that's what that is. Oh. Usually, typically appear in the person's 20s and 30s and become larger and more numerous over time. And they have an increased risk of developing cysts in the lungs and abnormal accumulation of air in the chest cavity, a pneumothorax. That, I've seen two people with this.
Wow. Maybe they didn't even diagnose it properly. Maybe they thought it was neurofibroma.
Yeah, this is, I've seen it, but theirs was severe. I mean, it was just big, and it looks like, and it does look like little, I don't want to say cysts, but tumors or whatever, or nodules, but and they're just all over the skin, head to toe. And that's what this is. I had no idea that's what that was called, or called.
Are you sure? Have you seen neurofibromas, though? It's more common. Erythematosus is more common.
Hold on. Let me look at it. Let me see. There's two types. Type 1 and type 2. And let me see. That's Oh, that might be what it's called then.
Yeah, because that other one is very rare.
Yeah, that might be what it is. It might be the neurofibromatosis.
Yeah, you'll see little nodules everywhere.
Yeah. And they can remove them, but they just come right back.
And now they can't remove them because they're tumors on the nerves.
Oh, are they?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
And which is on the outside, you got on the inside.
Oh, okay. Well, that's what's weird is the fact that the mother and the, and this is when I was in Miami, the mother and the daughter both have it.
Yeah, that is, it's genetic. Runs in families.
Do they hurt?
Sometimes. Because, you know, they're, you know, especially if you lay on them or, you know, you push on them because they're attached to nerve endings, you know, you're going to feel pain.
Oh, okay. So kidney cancer. Long-term treatment of kidney disease using dialysis increases the risk. Usually, I mean, like the one patient I have now, the one that has lupus, she actually had kidney cancer. And they removed it. He only has one kidney now. So, and they didn't do chemo or radiation on her when she got her kidney cancer.
Depends on what type of cancer it is, where it's located, and what kind of risk she would be for having. Yeah.
Oh, true. Oh.
Yeah, chemo can also affect the kidneys, and so she wouldn't even be a candidate for that. Thank you.
Yeah, she's got stage 3B kidney disease is what she has.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and her mom had dialysis. Her mom had kidney disease, And he's like, she saw what her mom went through. See, she's only 61. And, but like I said, her lupus is what's wreaking havoc on her body. And so she's like, I'm like, well, and it all goes back to this, to the lupus. But the lupus is causing X, Y, and Z, all these issues. And she doesn't want dialysis. And that's why she's on hospice. She refuses. I mean, granted, her GFR on everything else is not low enough to even warrant kidney dialysis, but she doesn't want it. You know.
Gotta respect that.
And that's why I recommended her go to get on hospice. Not to mention pain management, because home health will not. Those doctors will not do the fentanyl patches, the morphine. They're like, nope. And so we couldn't get it. Now we have it under control. She was going from a 10 to like a 4 on a pain scale.
You got her on a morphine pump. That's the way to go.
No, she just gets morphine, period. And she's on a fentanyl patch, and she gets oxy. So, yeah, she's... And, oh, by the way, I'm going to talk tomorrow to my clinical team lead and see if she'll do the hospice show next Tuesday.
Awesome.
And we're gonna go over all of the, to get rid of the negativeness connotations of hospice. So,
well,
I want to...
Good deal.
Do you have any... our hospice started in Texas, and they're all over Texas. Do you have Traditions Home Health or Traditions Health in your area?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Oh, okay. We're in 18 or 19 states now, and I know they're in Houston and a bunch of places.
Well,
in Texas,
They may have one. I have another clinic in Sugar Land, which is near Houston, so they may have one there. But in the Rio Grande Valley, Brownsville, I'm not familiar with it. There are a lot of mom and pops down here.
Yeah, there's a lot of hospices popping up left and right, and there's a bunch closing. But yeah, that's who I work for, and. And so I wanted to have her talk about it, to go more in depth into it, you know, about it. And because like a bunch of my patients, they have no idea, and they do have that. So like the one we just got last week, and she has that. Oh, I gotta starve to death now. No, you don't. No, and she had no idea. And I explained to her, no, you can eat. As long as you can eat, you eat. You can take your medications, take your medications. Your body has a natural process to shut down. And, you know, and that's what I'm trying to get people to understand. Let me see. I'm going to see if we're, huh?
Yeah,
on awareness.
Uh-huh.
And some of the doctors, like one of the new patients that just got admitted today, his VA doctor will not give orders. Put him on hospice? Nope, now your medical director takes care of it. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah. A lot of doctors do that with their patients in nursing homes, too. They just have the nursing home medical director tend to the patients after that.
Yeah.
But I don't. I take care of my patients in the nursing homes.
Oh, my
and
God. We're...
Yeah.
Thank God. We're in a big cluster in Georgia. South Carolina, Tennessee, Alabama, Louisiana, Arkansas. Oh, wow. So, um, Where are you at? You're
Brownsville, Texas, Rio Grande Valley, on the border of Mexico and the U.S. at the tip of Texas.
Are you towards the south or like?
If you look at Texas, the bottom looks
uh-huh.
like a tip of a boot, right? The shape of Texas, the bottom looks like a tip of a boot.
Yeah.
I'm on that tip, the very tip, right on the Gulf of Mexico and the border of Mexico.
Okay, you're down there. Okay. Oh, no. And where did
the
you say your
south.
Other clinic was? In Houston,
in
you
Sugar
said?
Land, Sugar Land, Texas, which is a suburb of Houston.
Okay, we have three in Houston. It's actually League City, Baytown, or somewhere in there, and then Tomball. Yeah, actually, we're
yeah.
Sugar Land. So they're not quite. We go within 100 miles of the office.
Yeah, Baytown's a good haul. It's a good distance from us. Houston is about 30 miles. Downtown Houston.
So League City, it's next to Pearland, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, that,
I don't know how
that
far
might be
that
the closest.
Is.
Yeah, that might be the closest.
It is.
Place.
But yeah, I mean, I just want to, you know, bring an awareness to the good things of hospice, you know, and just get that ugliness away from it, you know. So,
yeah,
I have a
hospice rep that comes by the clinic. There's a hospice rep that comes by my clinic about once every week or two, bringing gift baskets and trying to get referrals. But, you know, hospice referrals are you know, if you have a healthy patient load and you try to keep your patients out of the hospital, there aren't very many patients that pop up every day for hospice.
No.
You know, it's just, you know, pretty much it gets to where they're, you know, advanced in their chronic illness. But for the most part, you know, with the functional medicine and, you know, we have the real close follow-ups, we tend to keep our patients out of the hospitals and out of hospice care and even out of the nursing homes at times. It's only when they need assisted living or there's no relative to take care of them is when a lot of our patients end up
and
in there.
See, honestly, unless you're like at the dialysis clinics, your cardiologists and your specialties and your nursing homes,
yeah.
your assisted living, those are the ones
right.
that they really need to tailor to. I mean, yeah, you want to go to your doctor's offices, but their whole thing is, you want to get them better, manage their care and get them better. Mine is when there's nothing else that can be done, then we want to help you transition into, you know, the quality of life and you know, and prepare you and your family. And that's really what we're for, you
yeah.
know.
And, you know,
we're
definitely advocates for hospice. Well, get me wrong. I mean, the hospice has its place, and it, not only does it help out the patient, it helps out the family, too, and coping and dealing with, you know, the process of ending life matters, you know?
Yeah, I mean, see, and what people need to understand is we're there a lot for the family. I mean, when you transition, right, from being able to get up and move around and you're starting to become bed bound and you're catatonic, unresponsive, you could be like that for 3 weeks. Okay, we're there to keep pain, we're comfort meds only, morphine, lorazepam, whatever, and that's that. Well, then at that point, we're there mainly for the family. Explain
yeah.
end of life, what to expect, you
and
know.
See, that's the thing. When the patient goes to that point and they can no longer feed themselves, you know, the family wants you to put in a G-tube or an NG tube because they think you're starving them to death. I've heard that.
Yeah, and that's why we have to educate. Educate. Yep. That's the biggest thing.
That's the biggest thing. But even that, all the education in the world is not going to make a sibling understand that. You know?
That's why we have books. We have little pamphlets we give them that explains the dying process. And I have to explain this every visit, pretty much to a lot of my patients, every visit. Any change, and they'll ask me, well, how long do you think they have? Oh, I'm not answering that one.
No, that's a loaded question.
I'm like, no. Now, the only time I can do that, honestly, is when they're unresponsive, they're not eating, they're not drinking, they don't have any output at all, and they're on comfort meds only. And I could give them a time frame, a window frame. And I'm like, and I tell them usually it could go from hours up to 3 weeks because that's what I've seen. Now, once you start adding in the modeling, the low O2 and the clammy skin and stuff like that, that's when you're going into days or hours to days. I mean, that's the only time you can honestly say how much possible time they have. And the important thing is to explain it's quality of life when you get to a certain point. I've had a few patients, family members ask about IVs and feeding tubes. And I'm like, well, yeah, if you want to seek aggressive treatment, but what you have to remember, when they get to a certain point, that's going to be the only thing that keeps them alive, nothing else. I said, how much of a life is that for your family member? And they're like, oh, okay. You know what I'm saying? And so they dismiss the feeding tube and IVs. And we tell them, if you want to seek aggressive treatment, you can. And that's their right. We've actually had a few of them that actually left hospice to go. They just weren't ready yet. They weren't ready to give up. And that's fine. So...
Yeah, I've had patients discharged from hospice, which is good,
Yeah.
It's a good thing. She lived 4 more years after the discharge from hospice.
My brother.
She was there for 6 months. Yep. And
my brother
just passed
was on palliative. He's on palliative care. They gave him 6 months. He has lived beyond the 6 months. Now, they can't operate on his tumor, no matter how small it gets. It's inoperable because of where it's at. So he has one more chemo treatment left, and that's it. He's on 2 Lovenox injections a day, and he's on 10 milligrams of Coumadin a day.
Wow. Yeah, he's very, very, very anticoagulated.
No kidding. He is like blood. Or does that mean his blood's too thick, right? The higher the dose goes, the thicker his blood?
The thinner.
Oh, I thought
there's a blood. Anticoagulants are blood thinners. Coumadin, warfarin, Lovenox. Yeah.
No, I know, but that means I thought his blood was just too thick, and they needed to thin it out. Is what I'm saying.
Oh yeah. He was hypercoagulable because he had blood clots, right? You were saying.
Yeah, but the blood clots
yeah.
are gone. But his, the cancer. What was it? The cancer is making his blood cells sticky, and the chemo. It's killing the cancer cell, and that's what's in his blood. And so, well, that's why he's like that. It's sticking to his blood cell. And so she's a little panicked, but you know what? She sent me a picture of him. Oh, my God. He looks like he's about 60 years old.
What?
And he's only 50. The cancer and the chemo has aged him a lot.
I bet.
A lot. But he's still eating. He's able to get out. I mean, he doesn't do a whole lot. Don't get me wrong, he doesn't do a whole lot. But I'm just wondering what's going to happen after that last chemo. if it's just going to start right back up again.
Well, hopefully not. Hopefully, you know, he'll be in a watch and wait period and maybe be considered in remission, hopefully. That's, you know, cross your fingers.
That tumor could just say, well, last it was 6.5 centimeters, which I think is probably smaller than that. But so even if it stays at, just say, 3, we'll just say 3, could they have killed all the cancer cells but the tumor still there?
Highly unlikely.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you hope so. Yeah, you hope so, but it only takes one cancer cell to start the whole thing all over again.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Wow. Oh, and his white blood count was really low, too. So they had to hold off last week's chemo a couple days, and then he was able to have it on Friday.
That's chemo, though, I would think.
Oh, yeah. But he's still getting a Lyrica and, you know, and stuff, not Lyrica, Keytruda, my bad. The Keytruda, he's still getting that, and it's helping. But I'm just wondering if that, it was once they do that last chemo in 2 weeks, if it's going to put him in remission or keep it stalled for a while, you know. But he is a walking miracle. Don't get me wrong. He really is.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, he's got to be real careful being on that much blood thinners, because one little bump on the head and he can have a bleed real easy.
And that's what he hasn't been on his oxygen in weeks. He hasn't needed it. So he watches what he does. You know, he doesn't get out and do everything he was doing for a while, because he was doing really good. They had him on 5 milligrams of Coumadin, and then it went down to 4, and then it's just been going up steadily, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, it just depends on what his INR is.
Oh, okay. I don't even know what his INR is.
Yeah, that's what they usually once a week or so they'll monitor his INR and they'll make the changes of the Coumadin based on that.
Oh, okay. Well, apparently, I don't know, if he's on 10 milligrams and Lovenox twice a day,
yeah.
I don't know.
He probably looks like a prune, as much bruising as he's getting.
He is anemic, really bad. Again, but he's always been anemic his whole life.
Mm.
So that's it for the for the common kidney disease, and that's pretty much it. You still there, Bobby? Lorna?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. No, I was just thinking if you were still there.
I'm here.
Any questions, comments, concerns, whatever?
No.
No? Okay, fine.
Somebody's breathing heavy, huh?
No, that's my air conditioner. I had to break down.
Oh, did you
turn it on? Uh-oh. It's only 83 in here.
Only 83?
Yeah.
Okay, so one of my patients was just following me. I got a message her. I swear to God, I live on call. My boss called me today. She says, I have 2 things. I'm like, no. And she goes, you don't even know. I said, yes, I do know what you're going to ask me. And no. I'm still going to be on call tomorrow. So I'm like, whatever.
Hey, so what's the verdict on the shoulder?
Oh, so apparently the VA don't know how to read an MRI result. So it's not a 50% tear. He says about 25 and 35. You know, it's not that bad. He said there's nothing he could do about the missing cartilage. Nothing. So he wants me to get an injection in my shoulder and my neck. He thinks now my whole arm is numb. I'm like, this is unusual, but now my arm is completely numb. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like if I was scratched my arm, the only thing I could feel is my elbow to my wrist. Above my elbow, I can't feel it. It's dull. And so he thinks a majority of the nerve pain is from my neck. So he wants me to do physical therapy on my neck, use the TENS unit on my shoulder, and in 6 weeks go back. He wants me to do the injection next week and then go back in 6 weeks. And if I'm still having issues, then he'll go ahead and decide on the surgery. He might do another MRI just to make sure that, he said, on the physical therapy that you were talking about, the heat and cold, he went on the shoulder. He said, just take it easy on the shoulder. Don't overdo it.
Yeah, modalities. Look at platelet-rich plasma stem cell injections. I do those.
Do what?
Look up a platelet-rich plasma stem cell injection, a PRP.
Oh, okay.
Stem cell injection. Do some research on that because I do those, and you might find that may be beneficial.
Okay. Tendon, ligament, and muscle and joint injuries. Okay.
Yeah, PRP.
Well, he's gonna
stem cell. He may do those, but sometimes insurance won't cover those. But it might be worth out of pocket to have something like that done.
Well, he asked me, and I said, look, I said, you could do, it'd be easier for him to do the injection because then I would have to, the VA won't take orders from outside the VA. So I would have to get my doctor to do it, and then never mind. You know what? I'll just have him do it. And... he said, and I said, well, I've already got a physical therapy appointment next week. I said, I'll go ahead and keep it and go from there. And we'll see. I may eventually need surgery anyway. But that's why he wants me to try the injections
one more time. Look up that PRP stem cell injection.
Yeah, it says, that and the dry needling. I may have them do the dry needling while I'm there next week at the VA. That did help drag up for 6 months at least. But it says they can last for 6 months, from weeks to 6 months.
For what?
For the injection,
the
result.
For the one he's going to do?
No, for the PRP treatment.
Oh,
it says most noticeable after several weeks for joint injections. Oh, never mind. That says 6 months for scalp injections. Never mind.
Yeah, no, that's something else. Yeah, but look for a joint injection because there is data showing that there has been cartilage replacement and tendon repairs with the PRP stem cell.
Ah, okay.
So, just do some research on it, on shoulder tendon tears and PRP and the efficacy of it, and see what you can find out and see if that may be something you and your doctor can talk about.
Okay. I'll ask him. Well, he's still making the appointment for next week, and I'll ask him.
Your own research first.
Oh, yeah.
Sell yourself first, then you can sell your doctor.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, honestly, I'd rather not have surgery, but if I need it, I need it, you know? And if he could fix it without it, that's fine. That's great. But, yeah, so apparently they don't know how to read.
Well, that's good then. I guess, you know, in your interest, that's good. But, you know, just based on what the radiologist said, that's all, like, me, I would have to go off of, and I would make my decisions based on that. So,
but that's what he wanted to see, the disc. That's why he wanted to see the pictures himself.
Yeah.
So. But that's all right. You know, I'm glad he's not a doctor that just wants to jump into surgery and say, oh, okay. You know, so. But that's fine. But I do have the other issue, though, with the moderate downward slope. I do have that issue. I mean, I still have those other little ones, you know. But hopefully fixing my neck will help fix that problem, too. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
We shall see.
Well, like I said, some of it has to do with using accessory muscles to raise your shoulder, and that can cause stretching of that acromioclavicular joint, causing that acromion and your clavicle to bend downward, the downslope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what threw him off was my hand being numb and my fingers.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, you don't normally get that with your shoulder with a rotator cuff stick there. I'm like, no, I guess not. But I told him. I said, it still hurts. He's like, oh, no, no. He said, it's a mild tear. Yeah, he goes, that is an issue. But for the most part,
you need an EMG MCV of the upper extremity just to rule out carpal tunnel.
I have. It's mild.
Yeah.
It's mild. So it's just enough to aggravate the shit out of me, but not bad enough to do any surgery or anything like that. So that's where I'm at. I'm a train wreck.
Yeah.
That's where I am.
Excuse me. Good beer.
So, Bobby, we got 7 minutes left. Unless anyone has anything else, we can go ahead and...
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it's only 7 minutes. Up to you guys, whatever.
I'm good.
Tired, long day.
God bless you guys. You just...
Happy Independence
Day. You just old.
That too.
Hey, I had your dopey brother over here for dinner last night.
Oh yeah,
I've got
three of them, so I can rule one out.
Angelo,
so either Angelo or Bernard.
Angelo.
Oh, okay,
Angelo.
I'm surprised he hasn't jumped on here with us.
Yeah, I keep telling him. He says, oh, I keep forgetting.
Yeah, check your messages, dummy.
Right.
Well, I hope
right,
he's doing all right.
Yeah, he's doing good. He's getting ready to move.
Wow.
To a better apartment.
I heard his other brother might be moving in with him, too.
Barney's supposed to be coming down here sometime in, I think, October.
Yep. That's cool.
Yeah, it'll be good to get him back down here.
Yeah, there's a lot of drama up there.
Yeah, he's dealing with a lot of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Drama's no good.
What's that?
Drama. No drama.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it sounded like you said grandma.
That's what I heard, too, grandma.
I know we can. Save the drama for your mama and keep your drama. You can keep it all to yourself.
All right.
Yeah. I'm telling you, that's what I got to do with my patients. She just called me. I'm like, oh, my God. Love her to death, but she's a pain in the ass. Glad she don't listen to the show.
All right. So, Kimmy, again, thanks for another great informative show. Phil,
thanks
for partaking. Lorna, as usual, thanks for being here.
Yeah, first.
I love you guys.
Lorna, you talk too much.
I hate talking.
I know, we can't shut her up.
So the next show is Wednesday, Thursday, Friday?
Thursday.
Thursday,
Saturday, Sunday.
I guess I ask that every week, huh?
That's okay. We don't mind.
I ride up to Houston every Wednesday after work, which is a 5.5-hour trip.
Yeah.
And then on Friday, we ride back, another 5.5-hour trip. And if you guys had shows on Wednesday and Friday, I could participate easy. I could just sit in the back of the truck and listen.
Well, we can always move Saturday to Friday.
Yeah. True, right? Yeah. I want to catch one of the other shows that I haven't caught yet, like the trivia show. That would be cool.
That's the Saturday one.
Well,
we
Saturday
can always
one.
Move it to Friday.
Yeah, and then the show Monday is the missing persons, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've caught the missing persons, and I've caught the medical show, but I haven't caught the other show.
Yeah, we're trying to come up with other ideas of doing, because we can broadcast 7 days a week if we wanted to.
Yeah, but we have to have more participation, like Weathers, but Weathers worked so much, or John, you know, just have to
yeah.
think of another show.
Right. But anywho, let's close this out tonight.
Okay.
God bless America. God bless our children, first responders, our veterans, the missing, our military, and God bless the Defender 7. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.